All right, everybody, welcome into the Fifth Dimension podcast with me, Evan McDermott. For this episode, I spoke with Gnu Roxwell. Gnu is a multifaceted artist, painter, musician, poet, social worker as well. And him and I had a fantastic conversation about the system as a whole, but ultimately how the system is really you and I. We are the system, and it is a method of organization that you and I feed into and construct on a daily basis with our choices that ultimately keep us in the state we are in. So Gnu talks about his own upbringing in inner city Los Angeles, his social work, his poetic and creative expression to create a positive impact. And solution-oriented is really where he's at. You know, he talks a lot about how, especially in hip-hop, we have talking about the guns and the violence and the gangs. And, you know, what's interesting is there's a time and place for that expression. We need to acknowledge the shadows. But at what point are we perpetuating the violence and perpetuating what needs to be healed as opposed to looking at solutions and seeing the bigger picture and ultimately letting go of the need to identify with the pain, with trauma, and kind of seeing the bigger picture here. There's a lot that I learned from this conversation about myself as a poet and artist and about a lot of these topics that we're discussing here, you know, because I've been working in social work with the homeless population here in Bozeman. And, you know, there's a lot of parallels. It's funny how there's so many parallels and solutions and same conclusions that you come to. Somebody living in LA versus Montana, two completely different cultures, but yet we come to similar conclusions. So I hope you guys enjoy this one as much as I did. Be sure to check out Gnu's new song, The System. It's very relevant to this conversation. I think it encapsulates a lot of what we talked about, actually. So check that out on all streaming platforms. The link is in the episode show notes below, and you can support his music by purchasing it from his website as well. I mean, they maybe get a fraction of a penny for every stream, so it's good to stream. Definitely check it out that way, but if you like it and you want to support him further, head on over to his website and purchase some of his music or paintings. All the links for Gnu are in the episode show notes below. Like I said, I hope you enjoy this one as much as I did. If you're a fan of this show, The Fifth Dimension, head on over to McDermott.substack. Subscribe over there. It is free to do so. Great way to stay on top of when there's new podcasts and my own poetic work, which is going to be evolving as we continue to move forward here. And you can also purchase my poetry book, To Marshal Love Against Tyranny. It's out now. And I mention it in this episode, the idea of marshaling love against tyranny, and I think it's very relevant. Just got to let it be, as a good friend of mine once said. Let it be. Let love be, because that's all it is. The second you try and marshal love, it don't work. Marshal Love Against Tyranny, out now. And be sure to subscribe, whatever podcast platform you are on. I mean, you can leave a review if you want. It don't really matter at the end of the day. That's your opinion is your opinion, and I respect it. So that's going to wrap up my little monologue here, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Gnu Roxwell. What is the truth in the stories we are told? We've been given a story of a world fueled by separation. We've become separate from one another, separate from the earth, ultimately separate from the true nature of ourselves. It's time we learn the truth. It's time you rewrite your story. It's time to realign with who it is that you really are. This is the Fifth Dimension.
You are infinite and eternal. We are infinite and eternal.
Our natural essence, we could say, is simply being.
We have this awakening coming together as a perfect storm.
We're ready for this. We have the capacity inside. We just got to find that.
All right, everybody, welcome into the Fifth Dimension podcast. For today's show, I am joined by Gnu Roxwell, multifaceted artist, social worker, a man of many talents, you know, that I can't even begin to explain in one sentence because, you know, so well-versed. Gnu, it's a pleasure to be able to connect and have you on the show, man.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And as I was just saying a little bit before we hopped on, I've been really engaging with a lot of your work, and there's something about it that's very grounded in its approach. And I think like you've experienced life, and like there's you're not just talking about these concepts of and ideas. You've lived through them, you see it every day. So I was wondering if you could just start by talking a little bit about your own background and kind of what maybe your upbringing and how that influences the work you're doing now, and sort of the perspective and the bigger why behind your work, because there is a lot of purpose and meaning, behind your art, behind your social work, everything that you've been doing.
That's funny. I'm actually just finished writing a song called The Why. I might need to take this audio bite.
Absolutely.
I'm an inner city Los Angeles kid. I grew up in like the 80s, 90s. I kind of saw the boom of like the crack epidemic and all that in Los Angeles. And just being an African American kid in the inner city, I think of course has an impact, right? On this, it's impossible for it not to, with like, I mean, we live in America. But for me, there's that component and the historic component, but then I'm also kind of live nomadically in a sense throughout LA. I was born in Compton, then raised throughout South Central, but then in my middle school years we moved to the west side of LA, which is before you and I were talking about, you were saying like you got familiar with Santa Monica and stuff like that. That's more like the west side of LA, which is completely different from the east side of LA. That had a big impact on me also, right? Just as you said, I've kind of lived the experiences and not just like talking about it. So you kind of have some people that they grow up or they exist in these sort of like silos, right? Where like all you have is like the East Side Black experience. But so you have all these prejudices that we all have prejudice because just from ignorance, right? If we don't have the experiences, we just go off of hearsay and what we hear, what media shows us, and we don't really have the experience for ourselves. So I feel like for me at a young age, I began to realize that there's more to the story. It's not just the side that I hear from my elders or the side that I hear in my community, that when I start going around people from other like ethnic backgrounds and stuff like that, I begin to see it's not completely the way they say, you know what I mean? Like, not everybody hates you, not everybody's out to get you. Although, like, yeah, some of that stuff exists, racism exists, prejudice exists, but that's not in everybody. And I think with having that at an early age, like middle school, 7th grade, 8th grade, I just took that approach to life, like understanding that life is there's just a lot of surface stuff that we deal with, or like conversations are very surface in life and it's full of prejudice. And a lot of people have commentary only knowing the surface, like they don't know what lies beneath. So a lot of the conversations that is just hearsay, it's all based off of surface information of people not really knowing what they're talking about. And even social work and me being a poet and you being a poet yourself, I'm pretty sure, poets tend to get on the soapbox, right? And we like complain about the system and, complain about this, that, and the other thing. But once I began to work in social work, I begin to see the truth about that, right? Like going into these homes and meeting the families, and it's just not a black and white experience. There's shades of gray, it's a spectrum, and nobody's perfect and nobody's 100% right or 100% wrong. And so you see that people's behaviors are driven by really like their deficits, you know what I mean? Or like needs and unmet needs is what drives people's behaviors. So yes, it's just so much to it.
Yeah. You know? Like, yeah, absolutely. Well, I love that you say there's more to the story, because I think a big thing that I myself have, especially as I've gone through the almost poetic journey in a way, mm-hmm. and before even involved, you know, because I have a similar work background and sense of working in schools, right? And mm-hmm. I've worked right. with the homeless population up here in Bozeman currently, mm-hmm. right? And so kind of seeing the groundwork, what's actually happening. But even before that work, I would say in my poetic journey, it's like, okay, there is a soapbox that you can stand on, and you can look at the world, and you can look at the problems, you can look at the system, you can look at all of these different ideas. And it's easy, I think, for us to want to have this entity that is out to get us in a way, you know, in a way it can almost drive us, right? Oh, this thing's working against me. Watch me now. You know, I'm gonna go beat this thing. Right. But once you start really looking at it, you start getting to the roots, you realize this is a byproduct of all of our creation, right? This is what we're feeding into. It's what we're buying into.
And that is the system. Like the system is the byproduct of all of us, our prejudices, our, you know, what I was saying before, the things that are driving us, we create this whole thing. And that is a system in itself.
Right. And I think that's also, the world is made up of different systems, whether it be at the, within our community level or on a large scale global level. Right. And it's a method of organization is really right. what it is. And it's right, individuals right. at the operating level, yeah. you know? So I think it's important. What would you say it was that gave you the willingness to go beneath the surface, you know? Because I think sometimes it is easy, even in art, to look at the problems and see the problems. I think a lot of people have great bullshit meters in a way. Like they can see that there are issues, there are things wrong, and it's right. easy to point them out, right? Right, and it, right. And so what do you think it was that allowed you to be even be willing to go underneath the surface, you know? Because I think that it starts with a level of like internal accountability first and foremost, and a lot of people don't necessarily have that.
Yeah, I mean, with that being said, I think that was just a blessing. Like, yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that was just a blessing. You know, some people have different perspectives and ways that they approach life mm-hmm. that is, it's not their creation. You know what I mean? Like, your approach to life is not necessarily your creation. And we can see that in babies, you know, like, two babies in the same space will react to life differently, you know, and the way that they react to life is not their creation. That's just something that's built into them, you know? Yeah. So I can say that I was raised in a single parent home, just my mom, and she often had two jobs. Right. So I was like a latchkey kid home alone all the time. And so with that, and it's not like I didn't have like video games and a bunch of toys and stuff like that. So I had my brain, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it was a lot of creativity, just art, building things, trying to figure things out, entertaining myself. And so I think I spent a lot of time in my head alone, being creative and figuring things out, and so then that's my approach to life. You know, it grows in different things as you engage in life. And I think naturally I'm a problem solver. Mm-hmm. And so like being from a community that like there's all these woes and there's all these complaints and there's always a finger pointing at the system and what is wrong, what is wrong, what is wrong. My natural instinct as a child was to, okay, let's figure this thing out, you know? And so as you begin to try to figure the thing out, then you're like, wait, but then there's this part that we could affect, you know, that we could fix and change. And so just even with my own family, you begin to learn like there's different types of people. There's the people who really want to solve the thing, and then there's the people that get attention from complaining, and what they really want is the attention, so they need something to complain about. And then you have the people who function out of fear, and they have like they have and they have their safe bubble, and they fear if you get is going to take away from what they have. So you have all of these different types of people and nuances kind of like working against each other, you know? So yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that fear is a huge thing too. And it plays in different waters for different people, right? There's some people who might have they're not sure they're making rent every month, but they're still able to thrive creatively. Whereas another person that might paralyze them, right? So everybody kind of responds to fear a little bit differently, and how their needs are being met. I think the needs thing is the In my own observation, whether it was working in schools or working with the homeless now, it's like it's all about needs. If people have their needs met, then they can start to, all right, I want to let me start thinking about what the next step is. Let me start thinking about how I can improve my own situation. Because a lot of times we can't even look at the bigger picture without looking at our own, without dealing with our own inter like what's going on directly in my life that I'm responsible for. Let me attend to that first. If I don't have housing, I can't even begin to think about the larger issues in my own community, right? So and I that's something I think we could both speak to in the populations that we've worked with, right? And that's it's something I think
Absolutely.
oh I think that's something that's maybe lost in the bigger debate when we talk about some of these issues, right? That's
And I think another thing that's lost too is, you know, working in this line of work, being the helper, right? Being like the social worker, we can often assume that we see the need that the person has that's not being met. And that's one thing that I learned too, right? Like I might look at it as, all right, it's a homeless person. What they need is housing, and what they need is food, or what they need is a source of revenue so that they can pay for the housing and pay for their food. But then as you work with them and you try to like solve all these things, and then it seems like they're self-sabotaging, and like you help set up this situation for them to have better, and all of a sudden they do something to derail that, and you begin to see they want attention more than that, or they want some kind of like they want friendship more than that. So, you know, oftentimes dealing with the system, like the judge is saying, you with me dealing with like kids in juvenile hall, like the judge is saying you can no longer hang out with these particular individuals because they're gang banging and smoking weed or whatever like that. And so in order for the kid to have this better housing situation, they can't hang around their friends anymore, but their friends is more important to them than this group home over here. You know what I mean? So, and the system is not seeing that part of it, like the emotional part of it or whatever other ties that are going on. And sometimes it's not, oftentimes it's not easy to identify what it is. Like we can see the situation and think that we see what it is, but it's something different, you know?
Entirely different. And I think we really root out those social, emotional, and spiritual aspects to people for this larger systematic efficiency, if you will, right? Because the judge in that situation might have good intentions. I like to assume, I like to assume they have good intentions, but like it's like, all right, legally we have to we're bound we tend to don't acknowledge those emotional factors. Because in that situation, hanging out with friends who I guess you'd call them a gangbanger or whatever it is, but that's serving the need, which I think is the fundamental need for connection, for community, for
And not only connection, but protection. You know what I mean? Like, if you're growing up, spaces I grew up in, the system is the enemy. Like that's how the system is viewed as the enemy. And, you know, and not even to say that that's wrong in a sense, because as a community, the experiences over time with the system, like the system has evolved. But, you know, if you get hit by a car and 20 years pass, and then all of a sudden they're making cars out of like foam, you still know the pain of getting hit by the car. You know, like, yeah. You're not going to trust. Oh, it's a foam car. I'm okay. You know? And so we have to look at like the impact of that. And some of these people, like whether it be homeless people or kids with juvenile probation or whatever, oftentimes don't trust the systems, don't trust the social workers, don't trust the police, don't trust paramedics. I was dealing with one kid. He caught a case because in his group home, a friend overdosed. The paramedics came to try to help the friend, but the kids in the group home thought the paramedics was being too rough with the kid that they were coming to save. Mm-hmm. And so the kids started fighting the paramedics because the paramedic is part of the system and y'all out to get us. There's no trust. That's a really relevant thing that sometimes those of us outside of it can't understand it. We're like, it's the paramedics. So clearly they're there to help you. But that might not be that kid's experience from the space that he comes from, you know?
Have you found successful ways to, I guess, rewrite the narrative of, because ultimately, like we were kind of talking about, we are as much of the system as the system itself, right? So like rewriting, especially with kids, I think it's a little tougher as they get older. And, you know, I'm dealing with somebody who's 55 and, you know, mental health challenges, and they're dead set on their ideas of what the system is, right? It's very difficult to uproot that.
Yeah.
Especially working with kids, is there certain ideas and ways you can present and change the narrative that kind of allows them to be like, oh, the paramedics, let me put my, you know, what my prejudice aside in a sense, and trust here, you know, kind of allowing deeper vulnerability. You know, is there a way that you're finding that is successful to rewrite those narratives? Because when I look at it, the bigger picture, that feels like if we want bigger change, it kind of almost has to start at that level.
Yeah, it has to start even before that. But yeah, you're right. Like, and I think that's kind of been my journey, is trying to rewrite that, you know, especially like I'm focusing more on my music now because I began to see that doing it person by person is so slow and the problem is so big that I need a bigger effect, you know? So I try to like write more about it in my music and use that as a platform just to kind of have these conversations, you know? But definitely even myself as a social worker, right? I was a hip hop artist before I was a social worker. So me going in, working with the kids as a social worker, I don't have a hat on and all that. So I come in as a regular social worker. But then as we begin to have like conversation and I talk to them about the things that they're interested in. If they say that they're interested in music, a lot of kids, they want to rap. So I'm like, oh, okay, you rap? Like, let me hear something. Let me hear some bars or something. And then it's like the language and the lingo. And I might let them know I rap too and trade verses. And all of a sudden the walls come down because like, oh, wait, you're not a, you're a social worker, but you're not a social worker, you know? And that has worked for me a lot, just building rapport on that level, being from a similar community as them, kind of speaking their language and the art thing. Hip hop has really worked as a bridge in that sense. Even though I'm a lot older than them, it still functions as a bridge, which then for them, because I like I said, the system is the enemy, right? Like the social worker is the one that took the kid from their parents and everything that they knew and put them in this group home full of strangers, people they don't know, and oftentimes kids from other hoods that they don't get along with. So now you took me from my parents and what I perceived as safety, no matter if they were like beating me, or if they were negligent, always high and leaving me home with no food, whatever you think that was, I found safety in it compared to being moved 25 miles away in a placement where my roommate is from another gang or a gang that doesn't like the neighborhood that I grew up in. You know what I mean? Like, we gotta judge the safety. What's the safety? And so, like, yeah, I lost my point, but yeah, I lost my point, but
All right,
oh,
that's a
what did you ask me initially?
so like essentially. Well, and where you're going with that, it gets me thinking about almost building bridges through, the direct connection, because it's kind of looking at the root, looking at the root of, I think, a lot of the troubles within the system. It starts at a more community level. And so, and I think, what you're talking about, especially with being a hip hop artist and kind of moving in that direction to make a larger impact, I do think there is a. Oh, and this is something I want to ask about as well. And I think this is a nice segue into it. Kind of planting seeds for almost like a cultural revolution in a way. I think that's something that's directly needed, because the system, as much as it is us, I like to do a lot of, as a poet, a lot of wordplay and look at the meaning of words in a way. And, just looking at the word cultural, for example, a culture, the first four letters of it are cult, CULT, and a lot of times it has a negative connotation, but what that just means is it's a group that we tend to worship, or something that we view as higher than ourselves, right? So I think a lot of times when we look at culture, we view it as this is bigger than us and we can't necessarily change it, so we feed into it and we buy into it, right? But the greatest cultural shifts are led by individuals. They're led by somebody with a message, with an idea, with a dream. And so I think,
That resonates with people.
right, that resonates. So I think there is a definite like hunger for a cultural shift that can feed a systematic change. Because, right, that's, as much as it's fed by individuals, individuals are fed by culture, right? They're fed by the system. It's like a yin
It's
and
a good
yang, if you will,
yeah
right? It reciprocates one another. So
absolutely
I think there's a big need for that. And is that sort of, how do we even, that's such a large topic. How do we even begin to
That's
start
my
shifting that?
goal. That's my goal, especially being a hip hop kid, right? Like, I mean, I'm not a kid anymore, but I grew up as a hip hop kid. And when I grew up with hip hop, we had Tribe Called Quest, we had like Public Enemy, we had just Native Tongue and General and Souls of Mischief and Far Side. And like, we had these other voices that weren't just thugs. You know what I mean? Just being frank, being honest. Like, when we think of hip hop now, it's all like murder you. It's all the worst parts of my community, honestly. Like, it's the parts of my community that cause us as kids growing up in the community to not feel safe. Like, when I was growing up in a community, yeah, the dudes on my block, I might know them, but as soon as I'm walking through another neighborhood, all the things that everybody's rapping about are the things that made me not feel safe in that community. And so, like, if that's all that the music is, we begin to perpetuate that. Like, it's encouraging the environment because the kids are looking up to this as a teacher, and my students found out that I rap or whatever, so it began to spread around the school, right? That this the teacher that rap. So hey, they would come to my classroom during in between periods and they want to rap or share bars or whatever. And I had a student that he was my student like all year. Second semester, he finds out I rap and he comes over and I'm like, all right, let me hear something. And all of a sudden, when he's rapping about selling, I'm like, dude, this is not you. Like, this the person that you're the persona you're putting on to write this rap. It's not the kid that I see every day coming into my classroom. But he perceives that it's synonymous. Like, that character goes along with rapping. In order to rap, I have to be this character. And that's really problematic, you know? And the dudes rapping, not taking accountability for it, you know? It's having a really negative impact on the community. Like, I get that that character exists in the community. I get that, okay, you feel like that's your story and you want to tell your story. But at some point, where's the accountability of wanting your community to be better? Like, you just want it to be the same of what you knew, or do you want something better to happen? Because you can talk about where you came from, but then offer something different, like offer, okay, what we should be doing. And I think that that's needed, is we should be offering what we want the community to look like, not just, you know, all that we feel like we've known.
Yeah, absolutely. What would what would be your vision for the community now? Especially, you have a young kid in this situation. Let's say he is rapping about, drugs and all of these things, and he's not that person. How do you inspire that? All right, well, bring out who you are, bring
Well,
out
yeah, that's
that.
what I try to do. That's what I try to do. And that's part of the reason why I share with them that I rap, right? Because my raps aren't that, you know, and that's kind of like the reason I exist still as a rapper. Because I could just let rap go, right? But at the same time, I feel like my voice is needed. Like, there's a huge void. And I'm just talking about life, you know, like as life is me as a social worker, life is me as a teacher, life is me as a father or just a member of the community. But there's a lot of life going on outside of this story of selling drugs and you know, disrespecting women and just the violence. There's a lot of other life. Like, it's all death, honestly. Like, all they're talking about is death. And we don't have enough life in the music. So I try to encourage that by sharing with them what I'm doing, but also with flair, right? Like, part of hip hop is humor. Part of hip hop is being clever and being witty, and all of that stuff still has to be present, you know? I can't just like beat them over the head with messages like, this is what you should be doing. It has to be fun. And so, like, I try to bring that to the music too, you know, so that it can be something that they want to engage with. And surprisingly, the kids are like, oh man, we rock with you like this, you know, they love it. And I think that that needs to be respected. Like, the genre doesn't respect that the kids, or just the listeners actually want something different. They don't just want the negativity that you're giving, and you're giving it saying that that's all that they want, but it's not all that they want, you know?
It's probably all that they're used to engaging with. And it's interesting because I think there's a place for it, in the sense where you don't want to deny the
Voice, yeah.
experiences that are negative, right? You can't ignore the fact that there are certain aspects of the community that are, like, if anything, there's a time and a place for that expression. And
Right.
but I like what you're saying. It's like the idea of voice no negatives without a solution. Okay, let's voice it. Let's express it. Let's see it exactly for what it is, and actually dive into it instead of burying our heads in the sand and running away
Right.
from it. I think it's very easy to ignore a lot of these issues, especially if you're coming from an outside perspective. I mean, before working with the homeless population, I could probably say unconsciously I was one of those people who would naturally want to turn away from somebody who's living on the street, right? Why is that? I mean, this is another person, this is a human being, and really, there's not much difference between myself and them, hardly any at all, besides circumstance, right? So it's like a lot of people, it's easy to just ignore that shadow side. But I think, if anything, with it being so prevalent in the culture, and I'd be curious your thoughts on this, like, maybe this, with it being so prevalent, it's because it's a cry for help and people need to look at it, right? That's why it's in our face in the culture, because everywhere else we're ignoring it. So there needs to be an outlet for its expression. right? There needs
It's something.
somebody needs to do something and see it, so it's
Yeah.
presented in the arts.
And sometimes it's not a cry for help. Sometimes it's a cry for attention. You know what I mean? And I think that's what time has shown me, that there's a difference. Like not every cry is a cry for help, right? Like some cry for the attention that they get, you know? And when you try to bring help, it's like, oh, let me go. I'm like, because if you help me, you're gonna change my circumstance, and then I no longer get the attention that I'm getting, because they don't know how to get attention outside of crying. And I think that's one of another major thing. Like, I mean, it kind of goes into parenting, you know, like nobody wants to look at the community needs to be parented, but like, you know, it's especially as a poet, because I went into poetry from hip hop, right? Like I had been rapping all when I was a kid, and then pursuing music, the music was shifting into like the Puffy and like Notorious Big and all that. So there wasn't room. My space was like the Native Tongue space, was like the Tribe Called Quest, the Roots, Common. That's my space in hip hop. But that space was getting very narrow and disappearing as they moved into the Jay-Z, Biggie Smalls era, you know? And so for me, that sent me into the poetry venues, because I could still rap. I just do it as a poem rather than as a rap, and the people will listen, you know? But what I began to see in the poetry space is that, it's pain pimping. Like a lot of people, they get on stage and they pimp their pain, right? Like they talk about the darkest things that happen in their lives so that they can be, it's for the applause. So they can be the poet that's worshiped, you know what I mean? Like, and it's really sad, because it's like the more traumatic your experience is, that you then write a poem about your traumatic experience, the room goes wild, and all of a sudden you're the poet that everybody wants to book for the venue. And I was a slam poet, so for me, I kind of went into that because it was kind of related to being a battle rapper, right? Like I went from battle rapping it, oh man, now I could battle with my poems. And so like that was exciting for me. Like I was young and getting into it. You know, I won in my area and whatever, and it was then we have a national team, right? And we go to compete at nationals. But then when I'm on a team and I'm competing at nationals, then all of my teammates, they just want me to do the one particular poem. And you know, and that's the poem, is it's all for, they want me to pimp my pain, right? And it's like, so we could get the scores and we could win. And everybody, I just begin to see, like, man, this emotions, it's a beast, right? Like it'll eat you alive if you're not, you know, if you're not aware and conscious of the reason why you're writing this, the real reason why you're performing this. Huh?
Absolutely. And that's a great point. I haven't heard it expressed like that, as pimping your pain, but I think that describes it beautifully, especially in the poetry space, because I've been involved in a lot of like self-development and almost like growth communities as well. And I've noticed there's a tendency to really, to focus on things like vulnerability, to focus on self-healing. And I've had the questions before, and I never really get like a clear answer, because I'm not sure there is one. There's a time and place for vulnerable expression. There's a time and place to where you could, let's say, write a poem about your pain. And okay, maybe that'll help you heal. Maybe that'll help you move on. Maybe that'll help you let go, right? So it's like, all right, we're not gonna, don't run from that aspect. But at what point does all of your creative expression revolve around this pain, and you identify who you are as that pain, right? And there, it's a slippery slope, because I've caught
It
myself
is.
in that at many times. It's like,
Because you
oh,
could get addicted, right? You can get addicted. You get addicted. Yeah, I've been there. I've been the poet who, like, I could go into any venue in the city and they just let me in front of the line. Like, there, it's, you kind of become, I had a song like local celebrity. You know what I mean? Like, and you can get addicted to that. And then you begin to do the thing that gets you that feeling. You're like chasing that feeling. And like how you were saying before, like you really have to check in with yourself, right? Like, really, what is this about? And it could be a sacrifice because to write about something else means that I might not get that feeling again because everybody wants to see me turn myself inside out. They want to see me naked on the stage. They want to see me get naked on the stage. And today I'm wearing a bomber jacket. Like today I'm coming on with a trench coat and I'm not getting naked for y'all.
And y'all gotta
They not
accept and embrace, you
it,
know?
it's a strip club. The poetry spot is a strip club. And I'm coming in a trench coat, not taking it off.
That'll get
Yeah.
the
You know what I
audience
mean?
howling at you. Yep.
So what do I
100%.
do? Do I strip or do I keep my jacket on? Like,
And I think the easy choice would be to give in to what has gotten you, what has gotten you there. And it's a
yeah.
strip club in that sense. So, all right, it's fine. Let me do it again. Let me
Yeah.
validate that. But to go
Especially if you're
one's own
eating off
way.
of it. Especially if you're eating off of it. Especially when, he's booking college gigs and traveling the country and all of that, like selling your books. You know what I mean? Like, it really has a monetary thing to it. Like, you don't want to work this 9 to 5 anymore. You want to be an artist. And so that's how we get to the rappers, right? Like, the rappers, that's what they think. Like, I don't want to work at McDonald's. Like, I'm getting this money from this music, so I'm a
Right.
strip.
But and you could ask the question though, at what point are you still truly, I guess you're still an artist, but to what degree, are you an artist for your own authentic expression in who you are, or are you an artist for, again, a system of monetary gain, of something that is not a representation of your true ideals and experiences? And do you think it's compatible to truly to find a what like what do you think, I guess, what it I think it's compatible and it can happen, but what do you think it takes to really stick with oneself and continually having these conversations while also still thriving within the system that is here? Because there's not necessarily an escape from it, and we do have to play the game at times. So it can be very discouraging to go one's own way and realize you're not going to get the validation for doing so, because we're tribal beings. We look for feedback, we look for validation almost as a method of, because we're hunter-gatherers and we're not receiving the validation from our tribe. Hey, we might be dead, that might be the end of us. So how do you actually commit to
I don't know. Like,
that?
I don't know if it's possible, honestly, because it cuts off the food, right? Like how you said, like in the hunter-gatherer thing, like at the end of the day, we live in a capitalist society, right? Like, everything is a business. And so you can do it, but thriving is, I don't know if you can thrive and do it. Like, you can do it, and it's all in the way that you identify your success, right? So maybe that's the idea of thriving. And you're not thriving in the means of like somebody else's vision of success. So in a sense of like, you might not have all the money, you might not have all the accolades and stuff like that, if that's what the thriving is, if that's how that's viewed. But if you're able to, like, be your full self and not just this one side of you, and that's success to you, then I guess it is possible. But with that, you have to really be able to know the why, like how you were saying before. What is the real why behind what you're doing? Like, is the real why, how you said before, like healing? Is the real why myself speaking to my community and putting these messages out and having sparking conversations in a community and hopefully create a cultural shift in a community? Like, I don't think I'm going to make a cultural shift all over the country, but can I do that in Leimert Park? Like, can I create a cultural shift in just my surroundings or the people that I connect with, or even the people that just become my fans and start following me? Can I begin a cultural shift like that? That's success for me. And I might not have all the streams that Jay-Z has or that Kendrick Lamar has and all the Grammys, but so it's all in how you define success. And I think in that way, yeah, you can thrive and you can make it, but you can't begin to look outside and like kind of desire their success. Like, if you're still desiring the accolades and the Grammys, you're not going to feel fulfilled because you're not going to get those things.
Right. Exactly. There's a realistic, almost, I think, expectation we can have for oneself and define success in a way that is, what is the direct impact I'm having on the people around me? Right. Can I go to bed at the end of the night knowing that I was authentic to myself, authentic to my community, was able to explore and express myself in a new way and contribute to something better than my individual self, right? Because if you're, let's say you're, and there, I don't think there's anything wrong with desiring success, but let's say you're desiring a Grammy or you're desiring some sort of accolade validation, the why then becomes self gratification in a way, more so than the direct impact that you're talking about. Because I mean, somebody like Jay-Z naturally has influence over society based on the amount of streams he has. What influence he is having, I mean, that's listen to the music and you can find out pretty quick, right? it's all right there. But I think it's more so focusing with the conscious intent of I'm going to make an impact, more so than I'm going to be validated for my impact, is when you actually really start to make that impact, right? That's when you start to make change that actually matters. Because I think we all, regardless of our intent, we're kind of constantly going through life impacting the people around us anyways, even if it is more of a unconscious or even, you know, if I show up in a...
Always in a, influence.
Yeah. If I show up in a terrible mood to... my job, and I go in like looking for confrontation. I go in guns blazing, and I'm, you know, maybe I'm a little more accusatory and I'm holding things like, and it's all internal, right? But that presents itself externally. That's going to impact all of them. And who knows what type of domino effect that's going to have, especially for somebody who is in a more vulnerable position, you know, with their own resources, right? So I think we got to be very conscious about how we're showing up in that way, because we're going to make an impact regardless.
Yeah. We're not conscious enough.
Yeah.
You know, like, and And I think exactly to what you're speaking to, you know, I'm releasing a song next month called The System, speaking to that exact thing that you're talking about. Like, that's the idea, right? Like, we are the system. So exactly what you're saying, like, we impact each other. We influence each other. Like, that's what the system is the way that we impact each other. You know, like, it has an impact on our day. Us having a good conversation, when I leave the conversation, I'm going to feel kind of bubbly because I just had a good, healthy conversation, you know?
Right.
Whereas if I was just sitting with somebody who was just complaining and complaining and complaining, afterwards, like, feel exhausted and down and like, man, I need a pick-me-up because... Yeah. You know, like, and that's all part of it, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And what do you think is the, You've done a lot of the groundwork, and so am I. And I feel like these types of almost a more holistic approach and person-centered approach is becoming more of a focus, I think, at least within a lot of the some of the organizations that are doing this groundwork. And I think in terms of, people within their communities, a lot of they're looking for solutions. They're looking for ways to have a more meaningful life. I think people are, I think part of the with how global this world is, we sort of see people living their the people living their dream, people living the best life, people getting finding all this beauty and meaning out of life in a way that maybe we didn't see it before, and we didn't have a scope that was beyond just directly what's in front of us. But so I think there's a
I wonder how genuine that is,
well,
because we see that through social media. You know what I mean? So it's a curated display.
No, and that's true. And it's like, what are we being influenced to believe about the world, influenced to believe about others? But some of the, a lot of the conversations that I'm having, and maybe it's just maybe it's because I'm looking for this, we're all biased in our own ways, but it feels like we're moving in a direction where a lot of people are tired of the of being influenced negatively by the system or being feeding into, because I think a lot of these ideas, like not all of them, some of the aspects of the way that we organize ourselves are a bit archaic and not more modern, and they're not people-centered. And I think people are, at least in their interactions that I'm having, people are more people-centered. They're more conscious about the impact that they can have on others, to a certain degree, as long as certain needs are being met, not in every community by any means. But do you think we're trending in the right direction with this type of movement? I mean, do you have an outlook for what you think the system is going
I
to
mean,
look
if
like?
that was, I think you're fortunate in your experience, because I don't know, I'm not seeing, I'm definitely seeing part of that. So I'm definitely seeing like that self-help, the happiness centered thing, but it feels very much like a me happy, like make me happy. Do what serves me. Not so much the others part. Like I'm not seeing the others part, like the being sensitive to other people's needs, being sensitive to how I impact other people, just even on social media, like the debate of who's the GOAT, LeBron or Jordan. And you know, if you say either one, someone jumps on you and you should jump off a cliff. Your mom should have never had you. Like, what
I say Larry Bird, and all of a sudden the comment section blow up,
Yeah, exactly. So, like, how centered are we? Just some of the things that people say on social media, even like, even racial stuff. Like, you would like to believe that we're getting into a better place with the whole racism and all. Like, can we? We've all been around each other for a long time now. You know what I mean? But just the there's a bunch of kids running into a mall and stealing everything, and then all the comment section becomes so like, right here they go again. Look at all these monkeys up. And it's like, bro, for real, like you really feel comfortable just jumping out on the, and there's hundreds and hundreds of comments. And it's like, yeah, racism's still here. Like, you know, it's gone nowhere. Like it's not hard to find people being venomous and just saying the worst of things in the spur of the moment on their keyboard or on their phone, regardless of how that affects anybody. Like, you're just throwing it on a wall. Like, you don't even know any of the people that's about to read this comment that you just made and the impact that it's going to have on society, on the people. You know, like it's.
Absolutely. And I think there's as much as what I was saying before, as people who are willing to change, I think there is just as much reactivity as well. People who are who do just say what they will without even thinking about the greater picture. And you know, it's interesting because I'm in Montana and it is like 95%, I want to say like 90-95% white. But we did a study in the organization I work at, looking at different outcomes for, you know, let's say one of the somebody who's unhoused does something in the actual shelter to where they're getting thrown out. It's a low barrier shelter, so there's no, like, anybody can come in, doesn't matter what their background is. You know, there's nothing that, it's all behavior based. So if somebody has behavior that is, we deem, you know, negligible, then they won't be able to come back, right?
Right.
And they're looking at the outcomes over the last couple of years, and I've only been there since towards the end of last year, so I haven't been there that long, where they're looking at what were the outcomes for, you know, minority groups versus you know, white. And white is the dominant, this is Montana, white is dominant, right? It's but it's interesting how for the same behavior, minorities were thrown out of the shelter more often when it wasn't a conscious decision. It wasn't something that was like, oh, we're gonna he's an African-American, let's throw him out. You know, it wasn't necessarily that, but it's like you know, the implicit biases
is the system. Like, it's a natural thing. I mean, you know what I mean? It's
right.
It is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's something that we can't really deny that it exists, you know, like.
Right. And it's one of those things, I think we can only start with individual self. And like you're talking about, recognizing our own prejudices, recognizing how is it that I am feeding certain ideas or ideologies, or how am I reactionary?
Yeah.
And then from there, committing to do better, because none of us are going to be perfect by any means. I think a lot of times it takes it's one of those hard to swallow pills to acknowledge I can do better. I can be more accountable. I can be a bit more responsible.
There's so much shame in being wrong, right? Yeah. Like I started a verse off of this other song, like, being wrong doesn't mean something's wrong with you. Like, the only thing wrong is to deny it's true. Like there's so much of, like, if I'm wrong, there's something wrong with me. Like, if too many of us, like, they make that connection, right? Like, and we see it in kids, if they have the wrong answer, and it's like, you put your head down, and it's like this shame come with it, because praise comes with being right, right? Like, it's so fundamental in our society. Like, you get praised for having the right answer or doing the right thing. And so naturally, when I do the wrong thing, even if you're not shaming me, the fact that I don't receive the praise, because it becomes addictive, right? It's back to the poetry spot and doing the poem and everybody praised you. Like, the praise, you chase the feeling that you get from being praised. So when you do something and you don't get that feeling, like, that's not what you want. You want the praise, right? So, like, in a bigger scheme of things, nobody wants to be wrong. And often, you know, you see it in relationships, like, your significant other, I don't know you, but I've been in relationships where, like, the person is clearly wrong, but they refuse to admit they're wrong. And they begin to go all other angles and just pulling stuff from every angle just to argue for the sake of being right, rather than the solution and what are we really trying to get to, you know? Yeah. And that's just in so much of our lives, from every aspect of our lives, you know, it's just so much shame in being wrong that it prevents people from doing the self work. Like, what was my part in this? You know, like, we can't do the what was my part in this, because me having a part in the thing that went wrong is devastating, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we tend to make it a reflection of our self-worth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like, but it's nothing wrong with you. It's nothing wrong with you. Like, you're not worth less because you were wrong.
Right.
You know? And in all honesty, well, my approach from early on was, because I love being right. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah. Me too.
I love being right. But I realized the only way that I can be right all the time is if I could say that I'm wrong. Because if I could see when I'm wrong and say, all right, yep, I'm wrong, then I could switch to do right, right? Like, then I could change to the right answer. So then I could for real be right. And I just pretend that I'm right, but really be right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it's like that idea that true wisdom is knowing you know nothing, and that it's like, all right, I'm going to accept the fact that I probably don't know anything, and I'm going to get a lot of this stuff wrong, and I'm ignorant. There's always going to be more sides to it that I probably don't see and understand. So I'm going to miss aspects, but you know what? That's cool. Let me approach it with what I see and what I can understand and go from there. You know,
and let me look at this other angle. Like, if you know, we're having a conversation and you might be right. So let me look at what you're talking about. You know what I mean? Because for me, it's embarrassing to argue that I'm right when I'm really wrong.
Yeah.
And then everybody begins to see that I'm really wrong, but I'm sitting here like the dumbass. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's embarrassing for me. Like, I'd rather change and like to the perspective that makes more sense and that is more correct than for me to just stand on some dumb stuff, you know?
Right. And I think we're used to being almost in a competition or debate, even with just our ideas and our opinions, as opposed to listening to understand and maybe change and maybe grow. And it's like, all right, this person might be totally wrong and kind of dumb and ignorant, but I'm still going to listen. You know, let me hear what they have to say. At the very least, I could maybe learn about their perspective and, you know, maybe learn about their mindset.
I found myself doing that. Like, it was I tend to, like, when people follow me, I'll check out their page, and oftentimes I follow people back. And so, like, again, following this one guy, and, you know, at first he was funny posts, and then he began to post, like, really racist stuff or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I kind of engaged it just to try to give some other perspective, and then he's just day after day. And I was like, dude, this dude is really like, what's the angle? Like, what is he trying to get out of this? And of course, I could have unfollowed him, right? Like, this is simple as a click of a button. Mm-hmm. But then I began to see, like, but I need to know, like, what the line of thinking is. Yeah. So I just I don't engage anymore. I'm not getting it, you know, argue with fools. Like, you know what I mean? But at the same time, okay, what is the line of thinking? Like, what understanding can I gain out of hearing him spew whatever he's spewing unapologetically?
Right.
Like, you know, like, so there's that, what you're saying, you know, sometimes I just need to see so I can understand what the angle is, like, you know?
Exactly. There's no, I'd say, harm in at least healthy communication and attempting healthy communication, you know, because it's like maybe somebody posts something and it's one thing, but it's not what the person thinks they're actually saying or posting. And if you engage in a conversation, they change their view, or they understand for the better, or at least you understand them for the better, right? And that's it's like, okay, I can make peace with that interaction. I suppose, you know, I've definitely had things like that in the past where it's like, okay, go with the flow. Cause I'm not the one I personally, if it's somebody in my own life and I know them, like, we're all going to have disagreements. It would be very boring if we all thought the exact same way. Cause you know, going out in the world, what would be the point? So I kind of enjoy when I come across somebody or something that's like really challenges me. Cause I'm like, okay, This is interesting. Let me feed into it. Let me hear it. I want to hear what you have to say. So, and I'm not going to hold it against them personally, unless they are, and even then, like, unless they are coming at me directly as a person in my character, you know, it's not about me at the end of the day. I'm not going to play the victim. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that.
Like,
they'll do their thing. I'll do my thing. And maybe we can try and understand each other, but I think if people had that approach to at least communication, you know, maybe it would we'd have a little bit healthier dialogue in our communities and on the bigger picture too, because so much of within the system is unhealthy communication. It's almost like violent communication. It's coercion. It's threats of force. You know, you need to see it my way, or you need to follow this political figure. You need to look at this. You need to look at that. And it's like, hold up, we've lost the plot. You know.
Yeah, it's very much. Sometimes I think it's like a colonial way of thinking, right? Like, because it's always us individually tend to think my way of thinking is better, and all you need is to think like me. If you just thought like me, you know, life would be better. And so we try to force our ways of thinking on each other, right? Like politically, socially, like, and there's so many like fights on social media, even entertainment wise, even sports. Like I was saying with the GOAT conversation, is it Kobe, LeBron, or like everybody wants to force the other one to think like them. And if you don't think like me, you're a fool. Like you're less than. If you don't think like me, you're less than. And they even go as far as like, you shouldn't even exist. If you don't think like me, you shouldn't even exist. And it's ridiculous. You know what I mean? It's like, it's ridiculous to not see that we all have a space in this world. Like this world is a big place. You know what I mean? And like every culture has its space. The LeBron lovers have a space, and the Jordan lovers have a space. And like, I don't need to come conquer your space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes across, you know, different cultures, because culture of LA is going to be a lot different than the culture of Montana, right? Even, and that's in the same country. It's in the same country. You said West LA versus East LA, right? Even within a 10-mile radius, you know? And I think that there's a beauty in honoring that instead of trying to get people to all act the same or be the same, because people are different. You know, they have different experiences, and I think there's I think the artistic beauty, something that makes art is the recognition of those different cultures and recognition of those different spaces. And you can kind of go somewhere and, you know, one of my favorite places that I've been to, I remember only time I've ever been to Europe, I was in Paris and I went to the Louvre, the art museum. And I didn't have a deep appreciation of art then. Like I was kind of, you know, just going through life at that point, and I wasn't paying all that much attention to art. But I remember going in there and being blown away by the different art and you know, throughout the different time periods and seeing all of it. I'm like, wow, there's just such like stories being told through a painting, you know? Like somebody's life work is in that, and like their whole life story. And it's like, can you sit there and like just acknowledge and be present with that and somebody's authentic expression? I mean, not everybody's gonna paint the Mona Lisa necessarily, but you know, there's still a story behind all of it. So, and I think that's true. You know, I would hope with, you know, I put out a poem. If somebody's going to interact with it, I hope that the way they would interact with it is to just engage and be authentic with it and be like, let it draw out authenticity within themselves so they can feel and understand, right? So I think if everybody had that sort of outlet, or at least began to explore that, then a lot of these, not all, the problems wouldn't solve themselves necessarily. Challenges wouldn't solve themselves. We still got a lot of work to do, a lot of healing to do, a lot of communication to be had. But you know, it's at least a start, because I think everybody has authenticity they're desiring to express. Work like yourselves that you know, like that you're doing, for example, it can be an inspiration for that. It's like, hey, he's authentic. I hear authenticity here.
Hopefully.
You know, what does that look like for me? Then people can start to explore that a little bit. But
I think the biggest challenge for me is like, I have to accept that same thing for me. Like, so in the sense of like, there's still a degree of if everybody just thought like me. You know what I mean? Like
oh, of course.
even if everybody just thought like me in the thinking that everybody should let everybody think the way they want to.
Yeah.
Like it's this. So I within myself have to accept that, you know, some people need to conquer.
Yeah.
and they're not going to think like me, and I can't expect them to think like me. I can't try to force them to think like me. And that's the conundrum with life and existence. And there being so many people on the planet, right? Like, there's always going to be some sense of government, even if we didn't have government, because even if you got rid of government, there's alphas in society.
Hierarchy.
That's going to become the government.
Right.
Like, and so all I could really do is, like you said, like share, right? All I could do is approach life the way that I see fit to approach life. And if that can inspire other people, if that can have a positive impact on other people, then that's beautiful. And I feel like a worth in that. I can't force I can't force me on everybody. And I know that I'm not for everybody. Like, everybody's not going to love the music. Everybody's not going to get the music. You know what I mean? And I have to be cool with that too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Be like, all right, you know what? Somebody doesn't resonate with it. That's cool. Maybe there's something in their experience to where they just cannot understand my experience. That's cool. That's cool.
Right. Let them have their space. Yep. Like, let them have their space, you know, like.
Exactly. Because the second we, you know, I had somebody, a conversation last summer where they asked me, how do you marshal love against tyranny? Like, how do you use love and organize love in a way to defeat aspects of tyranny? And I was thinking about it, and it was such a deep question and thought. And I'm like, I don't know if I can organize love. I don't know if I can even the word marshal to like almost like
it's an oxymoron.
Yeah, it's like I don't even know if I can do that with love. Right? To love is to let it be in a sense. You know,
And
I think sometimes that's the greatest thing we can do. If I want to push love. Some of it is, it's not my alley. It's not my backyard to go conquer, you know, let it flow. And people will do them, you know, and I sometimes that's a hard pill to swallow, you know, the whole world is not necessarily my responsibility, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like the bridge will build itself.
Yeah.
Like oftentimes we just like leave people their space. Then the olive branch comes across, you know? Because everybody wants safety, right? Like that's, at the end of the day, that's kind of like what life revolves around, is securing our needs and like food, shelter, you know what I mean? And so many things like just stem out of that, even hoarding money and hoarding riches is kind of rooted in the fear of like ever not having. And whether it be like you not having or your kids not having or your grandkids not having, at some point you're hoarding it all for this sense of like safety. And then we get like the esteem and the others worshiping us and looking up to us, and it just builds up from there. But if like us forcing our way of thinking is threatening to other people. So, you know, it's combative. We think that we're like trying to recruit people or however you want to say it, like you're pushing your way on to people, but that actually makes them fight you more. Whereas if you let people be, then they can begin to feel safe around you, right? And then when they can feel safe around you, it's like, okay, you're cool. And now when I see that you're cool, it's like a new neighbor, right? Mm-hmm. If I see that you're cool and all of a sudden your car is not starting up, I feel cool to come help you, like, oh, well, what you need? Like, because I see you're cool and you're not a threat. You
right.
know, but like when somebody seems like threatening to you, you don't even care about what they need because they're, you know, they're threatening, they're trying to take what I have. So I think the more that we can let each other be, the more peaceful we become, and actually the more bridges are built from that. And then we end up, when we build a bridge, we begin to create a culture together. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. Yep. And that's the beauty of it. I think the moment I try and force, even if I perceive them to be great values and morals and whatever it may be, my way of life onto somebody, I am saying, the way you're doing it, who you are, not valid. Doesn't matter. Don't care. Right, no, right. And that's like that's worse than an act of violence. That's a disregard of the person somebody is and their experience. You know, and it comes back to people want to be seen. People want to be understood. You know, they don't need to be told how to live.
So
that would be the greatest act of tyranny is to disregard the individual and the soul and somebody's lived experience. So that was a big learning lesson for me, in a way, to think about that idea. Let it be, let it flow. It'll sort itself out. You know, we'll build together eventually when the time is right. So awesome, man. We're about an hour, 15 minutes in. This has been fantastic. This has been flowing. You have any I don't know about final thoughts or just, you know, ideas you're sitting with or places you'd want to send the listeners to further engage with your own work? I know you said you had some future projects coming out soon, some new music or
I'm releasing some new, I don't know when this will post, it might be at the same time, something like that, but I'm releasing new songs. So everything's always on all of the streaming services, so it's just GNEW, which is GAKNEW, and I have my website GNEW.com with like paintings, and my book is for sale on the website, music and stuff like that. And I'm really trying to it's a whole separate conversation, but you know, the music landscape and the streaming services, it really, you can't sustain as an artist off of streaming, right? It's like 0.003 of a penny. Like, you know what I mean? You need three streams to get a penny, basically. So what I've been doing is just releasing singles on like the streaming services, but then housing the complete project on my website. So then people could go to my website and purchase the music from me. And then that way I could sustain myself as an artist and keep continuing to make art. And the point of making the art is to have like a more positive impact on the community and, you know, in a demographic of people that do listen to hip hop, to know that there's a different voice in hip hop and not just the negativity that just keeps like folding on top of itself. That's really it. Thank you. I this is a great conversation, man.
This has been good. We'll have to plan on doing it again, because I think like it's the type of conversation that it continues to evolve and expand upon itself as time goes on, and as you know, the world, as we change, as the world changes, you know, our perspectives change and grow and evolve. So, you know, I think we'll have to keep doing it, and I look forward to seeing your creative expression continue to come out, because like I said before, I think we hopped on, there's like, I think you just get it, like you have the perspective that I'm like, all right, this dude's real, he's authentic, you know. I think that's what it is. So, you know, I appreciate the work you're doing, because I just listening into it and seeing, knowing what the reality is for a lot of people in the world, like there's a lot of people I think who need authenticity, who need a voice to not just the negative experiences, but like, let's shine some light on hope and optimism and creating solutions and bringing people back to themselves. And, you know, that's what you're doing. So I think it's, let that be a testament to your work and the impact you do have. So
So you were saying, you're like, where can I hear like your work at?
Yeah. So I'm you're talking in what, in LA?
Do you release like poetry projects or?
Oh, yeah. I put out a poetry book last winter. So I put out a poetry book, just kind of independently published, you know, and people can go buy a copy. I'm happy to send you one if you wanted to read some of the poetry in there. You know, I'll send it your way. Give you a nice little signed copy of one.
That's what's up,
You know, I
man.
put out a lot of times, like on social media, I'll put out poetry and just, you know, my authentic writing, and it's been interesting because I've gone through. It's I've been having the in something we talked about earlier, the discussion of, okay, what is healing versus what is like perpetuation of said new identity of pain, you know?
Right,
It's like
right.
because I've had my life experiences where, you know, the heart shattered, you know, people dying, like, just life happens. And it's like,
Right.
okay, how do I continue to grow within the poetry and express about the people in my own community, move beyond the identification with pain, right? So those have been a lot of concepts I've been exploring myself, because it is so easy for me to sit down and write a poem about like heartbreak or like love or, you know, whatever it is, what's familiar. So I myself am like in a, I don't know, a creative, a new, I don't know. The poetry feels new again, which is nice, you know?
That's
Sometimes
great.
you
Yeah,
kind of have
man.
to continually have it feel new every once in a while. And I feel like I'm
Right.
in a, sometimes that makes it a little bit more like difficult to commit and sit down and write, but it's because it is new. It's a little more, you have to, there's a more, oh, I got to be honest with myself right here. I can't just rely on what I know, but it makes it more fun and exciting. So,
Right.
but yeah, I'll send you a poetry book. And my like personal goal is to put out one sort of independently published poetry collection per year, just because I write enough to where I have enough poetry to where I can kind of do that. And,
Right.
you know, so that's sort of my, and wherever that, whatever, however people interact with that, you know, that's people do, you know. I hope people can take something from it and learn from my experience, but at the same time,
Right.
you know, publishing it and sharing it is usually, for me, that's where I feel like the success is, at least in my eyes. So far.
Right.
But yeah, I'll send you a
Cool.
copy of it, because I love, that's my creative voice, at least, you know, and the
Right.
poetry.
That's what's up. Well,
Yeah.
cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Yeah. And I encourage all the listeners, since we are still recording on here, I encourage all the listeners, you know, head on over to your to not just the streaming platforms, you know, maybe check out the singles on the streaming platforms, but then go buy the actual albums and music, because and support. So, and awesome, brother. Any other final thoughts or ideas or things you want to leave people with? That's a big overarching question.
I mean, it's like there's endless of
I think we're in the same spot.
I appreciate you having me on though. Like
Yeah.
I mean, we just like connected yesterday or whatever.
Yeah, no, for real. It came together quick. I saw the book and I'm like, let's go. This is it. You know, because a lot of times
That's what's up.
people book like a month out or whatever it is. And I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah. But it's like, let's go. Let's do it. We gonna make it happen. So
That's good. That's good. It was good meeting you too. Like, yeah,
that's
it's good energy. Like, yeah.
for sure. Yeah, likewise, man. And like I said, let's plan on doing it again in the near future. I'll have this out within the next like couple weeks or so. So
Okay.
and if you wanted to, I could time it to be with when your music's coming out. I mean,
Oh, cool.
if you wanted to do that, I mean, you could always just, what, I don't know if you have a specific date in mind for that, if you said
I'm
it'll just,
releasing something April 15th, but
oh,
honestly, I'm trying to release something every month. So
okay.
it just like
Well,
it.
yeah, I mean, I could time this to be right or like right before or right after if you want, and then it can kind of be, I could, you know, because I usually
Yeah.
do a pre-recorded intro too, and like, so in that I could say, hey, he has his new song out, go check it out, as of just came out 2 days ago, whatever it is, I don't know.
All right, yeah, that's what's up. Well, yeah, so the system is the song that I'm releasing. And
Okay.
that's kind of like my experience. Not it's partly it's colored by my experience in working in a social work and with the juvenile justice system, but it's also talking about what our conversation was about and our influence and our impact on each other is really, you know, what I try to explore in the third verse, and I realized in a rap, it's we can't have the conversation that we had in a song.
Right, yeah, right,
So
for sure.
it dances with those ideas, but it's really to plant seeds how you were, you know.
Right. No,
Just
yeah,
trying to connect with people, build rapport, and then plant a seed is kind of my approach.
Special thank you to Gnu for coming on the Fifth Dimension. As we mentioned, go check out his single, The System. The System, the System, the System. And I got to tell you, it is fantastic to see somebody like Gnu use his platform to spread awareness on the positivity for solutions, to see the bigger picture, to see what's happening in the shadows and acknowledge it. Say, hey, this is happening. I'll hold space for it. But how do we create solutions? So if you support this conversation, support his work, like what he's doing, be sure to check out his music, go buy his music. And, you know, this won't be the last time you see Gnu on here. Him and I really vibed. And I think we're in store for some great conversations in the near future. So if you're a fan of the show, McDermott.substack.com. Go subscribe over there. And you can also purchase a copy of my poetry book, To Marshal Love Against Tyranny. It is out now. And yeah, that's going to wrap up this episode. Be sure to subscribe because there are more fantastic interviews coming your way in the very near future. And I shall see you all next time. So long.